Hello, and welcome back to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm delighted to have you with me today. We're going to speak today with Raymond Francis, who holds a master's in biochemistry from MIT. And he's going to tell us his story about how he brought himself back from the brink of death and was able to learn a lot about how cells work in our body and how disease works in general. And he's going to share what he learned with us and hopefully give you some insights into how you can control disease. Raymond has written a book called Never Be Sick Again, Health is a Choice, Learn How to Choose It. And I realize that's a difficult thing to hear for some people because we certainly didn't consciously choose to be sick, but he's going to give you some ways that you can choose to be well. And I think that's a very important discussion. He has a quote in this book from Roger Williams, who's a PhD, who wrote a book called Nutrition Against Disease. He says, quote, "The most basic weapons in the fight against disease are the most ignored by modern medicine, and that is the numerous nutrients the cells of our bodies need. If our body cells are ailing, as they must be in disease, the chances are excellent that it is because they are being inadequately provisioned." Unquote. Now, this is going to be a controversial show because it flies against the conventional wisdom in America. But I'd like you to listen with an open mind because I think there's a lot of very important information here for us. So relax and open your mind, and we'll be back in just a moment after this message to speak with Raymond Francis. The Powerful Patient is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. We work with people who are dealing with complex medical conditions or who may be struggling to get a diagnosis. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We welcome your questions either by email or by telephone. Phone us at 1-800-767-4845, extension 6, or write to questions@powerfulpatient.org. Thank you. Welcome back. And I'd like to introduce now our guest today, Raymond Francis, who is the author of the book Never Be Sick Again.
So, Raymond, I understand that you've had quite an adventure with trying to find an answer to a significant medical problem yourself. Would you mind sharing some of that with us?
Well, it certainly was an adventure. Let me first of all go back and tell you a little bit about my background. I'm okay. A scientist by training. My studies were in chemistry. I'm a graduate of MIT. But I drifted off into the business world and became president of an international management consulting company and traveling all over the world, living on 747s. And I started to slow down and feel fatigued. Now, fatigue is the number one complaint made to doctors, by the way. Hmm. I started to feel fatigued, and I went to my doctor, and I said, "Doc, you know, I just don't have the energy I used to have. I'm just kind of slowing down. I need more rest." And the doctor did thousands of dollars worth of testing and came back and said, "Well, you're in perfect health." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Doc, if I'm in perfect health, how come I feel this way?" And he said, "Well, you're getting older." Well, I was 46 years old at the time, and I thought to myself, if this is what getting older is all about, I don't want to do it. It doesn't feel too good.
Especially not at 46.
And I said, "Well, Doc, you know, I've never felt this way before in my whole life." And he said, "Well, you've never been this old before." And I went away thinking, boy, this getting old is a real bummer. But 2 years later, I was really dragging. And I had developed lots and lots of allergies, and this time I thought, well, you know, I'll do something different. I'll go see an allergist because I've got all these allergies. So I went off to see an allergist, and the allergist did a an inappropriate diagnostic test called an intradermal test. And as a result of that test, I suffered a catastrophic immune reaction and became very, very ill and completely disabled. My immune system just spun completely out of control.
Oh, my goodness.
We should share with our listeners that an intradermal test is where an allergen is injected into the skin with a hypodermic needle. I'm reading from your book on page 5. This procedure is much more provocative and sensitive than the typical scratch tests familiar to most people. Intradermal tests may identify allergies that might otherwise have been missed. However, if someone is especially sensitive to an allergen, this type of test can provoke a very serious reaction.
And I developed 3 autoimmune syndromes. I developed lupus, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and Sjogren's syndrome.
Okay.
I had 3 autoimmune syndromes. I developed chronic fatigue syndrome and chemical hypersensitivity syndrome. I was experiencing seizures. In short, I was very sick. So I was now completely disabled. I went from, functioning not as good as I'd like to function to being completely disabled almost overnight.
So when you say you were completely disabled, tell us what the symptoms were, besides the allergic symptoms and so forth that you've described.
Well, I just had no energy at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're chemically sensitive, what happens is that your mind gets terribly affected by chemicals in the environment, even very small amounts, and so your ability to think, to remember, everything just goes.
Hmm.
So you have no energy, you can't remember anything. I would actually drive out to the grocery store to go buy groceries. In fact, there were times when I actually got to the grocery store, bought the groceries, paid for the groceries, and then left them in the store and drove home. So you become very, very debilitated and really cannot function in any normal way.
So you had to stop working, or you were still working,
yes.
But you were just with one hand tied behind your back?
No, I had to stop working. There was no way I could work. I could not even do then what I'm doing right now with you. I'm speaking on the telephone. I could not speak on a phone. I had to buy all speaker phones for my home because if I held the receiver close to my head, I could smell the fumes coming off of the plastic, and it would be sufficient to just blow me away for the rest of the day.
Oh, for heaven's sake. So, and the labels that the doctors gave you again were?
Chemical sensitivity, chronic fatigue, lupus, Sjogren's syndrome, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, a seizure disorder,
So this was one doctor giving you all of these, or this was
your opinion? No, I went to 36 top specialists.
Oh, my goodness.
36 top specialists.
Yeah.
And none of them could help me. And finally, one of them said, "Hoo boy, I can help you." And he gave me a prescription drug that poisoned my liver, and my liver died. And I literally came within inches of death. And that's when I had to use my own knowledge of biochemistry to save my life. And it was very dramatic. I literally was on the way out. And then it took me 2 years of learning and hard work to restore my health to where I could go back to work again.
So somehow your liver made it through, or you had to have a liver transplant, or what?
No, if you do it right, the liver just fixes itself. It's a very resilient organ.
So tell us more.
So after that, I went back to work, but it was never quite the same again. And as a scientist, a good scientist never stops asking the question, mm-hmm. why?
Mm-hmm.
And I started asking the question, why?
If why? There's an effect, there must be a cause.
Exactly. Why did I get sick? Why do people get sick? How do you get sick? what has to happen at the molecular level, at the cellular level, to have a healthy person become a sick person. And if you are sick, what do you have to do to get well? And I started getting answers to these questions that were so profound, they just blew me away. And along the way, and then the reason I wrote Never Be Sick Again is because I wanted to take what I learned and bring it to other people in language that anybody could understand. And that's why I wrote Never Be Sick Again. And Never Be Sick Again has literally gone all over the world. People around the world read this book and cure themselves of incurable diseases. It happens every day of the week, including stage 4 terminal cancer. They read the book, they go home, they cure their cancer. It's so simple. Anybody can do it.
So tell us basically what the basic messages are, and I realize you won't be able to go into the same depth you will in the book, but give us an introduction.
Well, what I discovered is that there are not thousands of diseases, as our doctors believe. Really, on the bottom line, there's only one disease. You see, we're all made of little units of life called cells. And indeed, all of us, started life as one single cell in our mother.
Right.
And now we're multi-trillion cell organisms. But we all started life as a single cell. And it's very difficult to think of trillions of cells, but anybody can think about one cell, and that's where it all begins and ends. If your cells are functioning normally, as they should, as they're designed to function, then you cannot be sick. If every cell in your body is functioning normally, it is not possible to be sick. The only way you can be sick is when a significant number of cells malfunction for whatever reason. And then you'll begin to notice symptoms. Now, when I went to my doctor, I already had serious cellular malfunction. Yet the doctor had no idea how to measure my initial decline in health. And that the same people, there are millions and millions of people in that situation today where they already have a decline in health, but the doctor doesn't have a clue about how to measure it.
Right.
So what we need to do is take care of ourselves. Well, as it turns out, that's relatively easy to do.
So you're saying that the fact that it can't be measured so easily is not necessarily a stumbling block. We can just assume that there's something wrong and make the general assumption that we need to work for healthier cells.
We can even measure those things. It's just that the doctors don't think of that way. They don't think that way, so they don't measure these types of things.
Right. Doctors in the Western culture who've been trained in the standard medical school practice haven't been taught anything at all about nutrition.
Right.
There is a growing movement to train some doctors in nutrition, but it's few and far between. And I think the term to look for is someone who is skilled in integrative medicine. That's the new buzzword for not only doing Western medicine, but also taking a look at nutrition and integrating the two.
Well, and naturopaths will also look at nutrition and look more holistically. But the average medical doctor today is literally so obsolete, they're irrelevant.
Well, no, I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but go ahead, just for purposes of argument, continue.
The average medical doctor is practicing quackery. And if you look at it from a scientific basis, for instance, the U.S. Senate has a definition for quackery. And the Senate's definition is selling unproven medicine for a profit. I'll say that again, selling unproven medicine for a profit. Well, when we look at modern medicine from a scientific basis, we find that approximately 85% of modern medicine has no scientific basis.
What do you mean by that? Give us an example of what you're thinking.
Standard medical treatment, let's say the medical treatment for hypertension or the medical treatment for cancer or whatever, 85% of medical procedures have never been proven by scientific method to be safe or effective. In other words, approximately 85% of modern medicine is unproven.
Now, modern doctors would disagree with that very strongly, because the proof is generally through clinical trials and published in scientific articles and so forth that do purport to show you the proof. Now, the proof is never 100%.
No. The problem is that it hasn't even been done. That's not proof, doing clinical trials. What you need to do is prove the safety and the effectiveness of a particular treatment. And what I'm telling you is that when we look at this, 85% of medicine has never been proven to be safe or effective.
On that note, let's take a little break here, and we'll be back to debate this further with Raymond after the break.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
We're back now talking with Raymond Francis, author of the book Never Be Sick Again.
85% of medicine has never been proven to be safe or effective. And even the U.S. Congress Office of Technology Assessment has done a study on this. The RAND Corporation has done a study on this. Everybody who studies it comes out with the same conclusion.
Which is?
Approximately 85% of medical practice has never been proven to be safe or effective. And so, therefore, approximately 85% of medicine meets the U.S. Senate's definition for quackery.
So go ahead. So go ahead and build your argument on that.
Well, it doesn't work. Basically, doesn't work, and it's very, very expensive. The treatment for cancer is it's a travesty. It's a crime the way cancer patients are treated, and it's so simple to cure cancer. Anybody can do it. So all these things, as science.
Now, wait a minute. You can't just stop there. You have to tell us a little bit more about the foundation for that, because there are a lot of people, even listening to this show, who are alive today because of Western medicine treatments for cancer.
No,
I had
not.
Breast cancer in 1979, and I'm alive because it was surgically removed. So the surgical removal was required, and I actually did not have follow-up radiation or chemotherapy, but I know
that's
people who did.
That's why you've done so well. But
well,
surgical
I know
removal
we,
is
we
not
talked
necessary.
With some, we talked with someone just 2 weeks ago who had chemotherapy in the 1970s and is alive to tell the tale. So,
most of them don't.
There
see,
is
those
some...
are the exceptions. You're looking at the exceptions.
Go ahead.
Cancer treatment does not work, and chemotherapy does not work. You know, the people who survive these things are usually people who have gone on to do something different and change their diets, change their lifestyle, done something different. And that's what really makes the difference. Not the chemotherapy doesn't work. That's scientifically proven. It's not something that anybody wants to do. And you don't need surgery. We just had a woman that came to our office. She read my book, Never Be Sick Again. She had breast cancer. She was diagnosed with breast cancer, went to the bookstore, bought a copy of Never Be Sick Again, realized that we were in the next town over. So she came over, and she said, I've got breast cancer. What should I do? And we said, real simple. You just go on a good diet, take some of these vitamins. Well, she went away a month later, 30 days later, she came back into the office screaming. She went to the hospital for her scheduled surgery to have her breast removed. They did an MRI. They couldn't find the cancer. It was all gone in 30 days. They sent her home. She got in her car, drove down to the office, and came in screaming. It's so simple. Anybody can do it.
Well,
It depends, of course, what stage your cancer's in,
no,
and I'm
doesn't.
Glad it worked for her.
No,
but
we have stage four, fully metastasized people with cancer. They just turn it off. Cancer is not a thing. You cannot kill it. You cannot burn it. You cannot cut it out. You cannot do any of these. It is not a thing.
Right.
Cancer is a biological process.
Correct.
And you turn this process on by turning on a whole bunch of biological switches. The way to get rid of cancer is to turn those switches off. And if you do that, the cancer simply disappears. And we've had so many people have come to us at just legion. People who are turning their cancers off, and it simply goes away. A lot of them with stage four, fully metastasized. We had one famous man, CEO of a big corporation, metastasized kidney cancer. They sent him home from the hospital. They said there's nothing that medical science could do for him. He was told he had a 50% chance of being alive in 6 months. He went to the bookstore, bought a copy of Never Be Sick Again, went home, cured the cancer. That's over 4 years ago now. He's in perfect health. So simple to do.
What do you consider to be the right kind of nutritional diet?
The diet that humans were designed to eat.
Which is?
Lots of fresh fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and eggs and fish. All of these things, that's what we were designed to eat. Our bodies were designed over really millions of years. Our genes took millions of years to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And however, in the last 100,000 years, our genes have changed merely something like 2%. So we're really designed to eat the caveman diet. And that means lots of fresh fruits and vegetables and roots and nuts and seeds and eggs and fish and things that were readily available. We were not designed to eat factory-produced processed foods, and yet that's what we're eating. If you take a fish, which again has been designed over millions of years of evolution, a fish is designed to live in water. It's designed to eat insects and algae and smaller fish. If you take that fish out of the water and you feed it pizza, what's going to happen to it?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to die.
Right.
The same thing happens to us. You take us out of our natural environment and you feed us pizza and we die. And we have to understand that.
Well, and it's not specifically pizza. It is elements,
using that as an example.
One could make a pizza with the right ingredients, and it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, right?
Well, it's very difficult to make a pizza from the right ingredients. In fact, it's probably physically impossible.
So tell me what you would say in that pizza or in any prepared food would be the wrong ingredients, the things
well,
to
first
avoid.
Of all, to begin, the white flour.
Okay.
Or any flour, for that matter, but most
especially. Even if you used whole wheat flour?
Even if you use whole wheat flour, you still destroyed so much of the nutrition. When you process foods, you destroy the nutrition, and you also add toxins. So first of all, the white flour in the pizza, or the flour.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the dairy, the cheese. Dairy is simply not appropriate for humans to eat, and the cheese itself is very toxic. And then, of course, modern cheese.
So you're saying
cheese,
all dairy is wrong for
yes.
humans?
Oh, absolutely. We're not designed to eat that. Milk is not a food. It's a toxin. And nobody should be drinking it, and nobody should be eating dairy products. Very, very simple. Mother Nature jumps through hoops to protect us from not doing that.
In what way? Tell me.
Well, most people, for example, become lactose intolerant right after weaning. And so they can't drink milk. They get sick if they drink milk.
Most people are lactose intolerant?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nobody drinks milk except for a few crazy people. 70% of the world's population doesn't touch milk. Only 30% of the world's population drinks any of it. And then there's 4% of the world's population, just 4%, drinks more milk than the other 96% put together. And who are those crazy 4%? The Americans. And so we have an epidemic of osteoporosis and cancer and heart disease and diabetes, all being caused by the consumption of milk. So we have to put a stop to that. We have to realize this is not a food.
I have to take exception to that. I have to debate this with me for a minute.
Sure.
You're right that a large percentage of people in the Asian community are lactose intolerant, for
that's
sure.
Because
and
that's
very
the way
little,
Mother Nature designed
little,
us.
Right. There's very little dairy products used in Asia, but there's a lot of dairy products used in Africa where you have goat's milk, maybe not cow's milk, but goat's milk. There's cheeses and yogurts all over the world.
Right, but not all over the world, but only 30% of the world's population consumes any of this, and then those people only consume small quantities of it. And then things like goat's milk, of course, are far safer than cow's milk because the chemical composition is much closer to that of human milk. But nobody drinks the amount or uses the amount of dairy that the Americans do.
Except maybe the Dutch.
Actually, Finland consumes more milk per capita than we do. And, of course, they have the highest osteoporosis rate in the world because of their dairy consumption. Dairy milk just destroys your bones. It's it's not healthy. You don't get healthy people from, and then they have high heart attack rates and everything else in Finland. So it's not a healthy food. Mother Nature did not intend us to do this, and that's why we become lactose intolerant. It's just that when you start eating this stuff, the body tries to compensate and not become lactose intolerant.
So it's designed for baby animals and it helps
exactly.
them during that
exactly.
phase of very high growth when
right.
they grow, what, at least 10 times their weight in
exactly.
1 year.
Exactly.
But for those of us who really don't want to grow 10 times our weight in a short period of time or in any period
or
of time.
Or to develop cancer.
Or to develop cancer.
Right.
I mean, there's
See,
a certain point when our cells are in a high growth mode in general when you're an infant. But mm-hmm. when you're an adult, most of your cells are not in that high growth mode.
Right.
But cancer cells are in a high growth mode.
Yes, exactly. So what happens is, there are growth hormones in milk.
Right.
And that's how you take a 60-pound calf and turn it into a 600-pound cow, these growth
right.
hormones. So when we drink the milk, we get these growth hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons for our epidemic of obesity and overweight. But also, there's another factor, and when you, as you rightly pointed out, infants need to grow, but adult cells don't need to grow, and when you stimulate them to grow, you can actually get cancer. So very, very inappropriate. And Mother Nature tried to protect us from it, but we've got around Mother Nature, and we're doing it. Milk is a perfect food for the infant of a particular species. So there's two things you can't do with it. One, you cannot cross-species feed. So you cannot feed mouse milk to an elephant. You'd need a lot of little mouses, by the way, if you wanted to do that.
True. Or the reverse.
Elephant or the reverse,
milk for a mouse
exactly.
is probably
because,
not also a great idea.
Because you will make the recipient sick. And you cannot feed cow's milk to a human. See, the milk of each species is unique to the need of that species. So you cannot cross-species feed. And you also cannot feed milk to the adult of the species. And so in Mother Nature, if you look at nature, you do not find cross-species feeding, and you do not find feeding milk to an adult. That's what Mother Nature is designed to do, and yet we've got around Mother Nature, and we do this silly stuff, and of course Americans are the worst offenders in the world because we drink more milk than anybody, and we've got to stop doing that.
One of the reasons that I've heard for that is the commercialization of milk, that it's not the Food and Drug Administration, but rather the Department of Agriculture that has been recommending that we have lots of dairy products.
Exactly, exactly.
This is one of those points that where there's so much confusing information floating around. There are the very positive messages about milk from the dairy industry and the Department of Agriculture, who of course want to sell us more milk, and that's understandable. But then there are the negative messages that are beginning to emerge that are saying that, by the way, milk does not improve the osteoporosis situation. In fact, it makes it worse. So there are other elements besides drinking calcium that are essential for bone health, and milk is not necessarily the right thing for us. I can tell you, I never considered myself to be lactose intolerant. I would never have thought that. And my family is very much pro-milk, so all of us drink a fair amount of milk and, in fact, do that with great pride. So there's a lot of use of dairy products in my family, and I should say we're all overweight. But every once in a while, I would be on a diet that says, oh, and don't drink milk products because the sugar in it will make you want more sugar. But I've always felt uncomfortable doing that, like you're omitting a major food group, and is that really a smart thing to do? Recently, I'm on a food plan from Prevention Magazine that said, drink lactose-free milk. And I thought, okay, I can do that. That makes sense. You take away that sugar so that you don't have that sugar butt, but you're still getting the good things from milk. So for 10 days, almost 2 weeks, I was on entirely lactose-free milk. And then I got to a different stage of this food plan, and I got myself some yogurt, which I've always enjoyed with my breakfast cereal. And I put the yogurt on my breakfast cereal for the first time in 2 weeks, and I had a tremendous reaction to it. So here I am. I'm discovering this late in life that I probably am, at least to some extent, lactose intolerant. And you can do that experiment yourself. Just drink lactose-free milk or omit milk for 10 days or 2 weeks, and then try adding it back and see how your body responds. You need to learn to listen to your body, and it will tell you whether you're lactose intolerant. Do you find yourself clearing your throat more? Do you have more phlegm in your throat? Do you have an upset stomach? Are your bowels working the way they ought to? Those are the things to listen for. Let's take a little break here, and we'll be back to talk more with Raymond about nutrition and staying well so that you will never be sick again.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
We're back now talking with Raymond Francis about his book, Never Be Sick Again. And we're talking right now about the pros and cons around milk.
And unfortunately, you know, historically, it was bad enough. But today, milk is a toxic soup. It is, in fact, the average milk has more dioxin in it than is recommended for safety.
So what is dioxin?
Well, dioxin is a very powerful carcinogen, usually produced by combustion products. So a smokestack, an incinerator, or burning coal, or burning oil, will produce dioxins, and they get into the atmosphere. And then we also produce dioxins in herbicides. But
so how does it get into the milk?
it gets into the milk because it gets into the atmosphere and falls on the ground and gets into the plants, and then the cows eat lots of plants. They eat lots of grains, and they get they bioaccumulate the dioxins. But they also have tremendous amount of pesticides. There's about close to 50 hormones in milk, including growth hormones. And not to mention the antibiotics and the pus and the bacteria and the viruses. This is a toxic soup you're talking about here.
Goodness.
It's not a food. But in any event, in my book, Never Be Sick Again, I talk about the big four, the four things that people have to stay away from if they want to be healthy. And the first of them is sugar. The second is white flour. The third is processed oils, and the fourth is dairy and excess animal protein. And I lecture around the country, and I'll tell people, you know, don't eat dairy. And 6 months later, you know, you get calls start coming in saying, you know, you told us not to eat dairy, and I don't do it, and my arthritis went away, and my asthma went away, and my allergies went away. You know, they get cured of incurable diseases simply by going off of dairy.
Of course, it's not all that simple. I mean, that's one component, but as you say, there are four major components, even in your own structure.
Exactly. But everything you do right, every time you do something right, you help the body. And every time you do something wrong, you're hurting it. And the problem is, most Americans today eat a diet of processed, factory-produced processed foods. These foods are low in nutrition and high in toxins. And that's a losing situation.
Okay. So, but you didn't mention fruits and vegetables in there. This is four things to avoid. And then what things would you add?
Well, what you need to add is fresh foods. Fresh fruits and vegetables, as I say, our primitive ancestors ate fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and eggs and fish. That's what their diet consisted of. It's what our diet should consist of, mostly fresh fruits and vegetables.
Just sort of the way they are, or do you have a problem with cooking things?
Well, cooking is always a bad idea. Cooking destroys the nutritional quality of the food, and it also produces toxins. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't eat some cooked foods. I do. But when I'm at home, probably 90 to 95% of my diet is raw. When I travel, that drops down. So I probably average somewhere around 80% of my diet raw and about 20% cooked. And most of that 20% is when I'm out traveling, because it's hard to eat a good diet when you travel.
Right. And we'll come back to that, because I think that's an important topic to talk about. Tell me your position on meats.
Well, you've got to be careful. Most Americans eat too much meat. It's as simple as that. The average American eats about 10 times too much animal protein, and that is having a devastating effect on our overall health.
About how much is the right amount of protein, or a right amount of meat?
Well, one egg is the right amount of animal protein for a whole day. And I will typically have like one egg for breakfast or something. A piece of a fish about the size of the palm of your hand, or a piece of chicken, or a piece of turkey, or even a piece of high-quality grass-fed beef. Is
so
okay.
three or four ounces of fish or meat.
Exactly.
And that's enough for a day.
That's your maximum for a day. We've very, very excellent studies was done on that, and there's a whole book on it called The China Study, done by Professor Colin Campbell, happens to be a friend of mine. Professor Campbell found that Americans eat far too much animal protein, and that this is a major cause of the disease in our society. So healthy people don't eat that much animal protein. You can eat as much plant protein as you wish, no problem. But if you eat a lot of animal protein, big problems. And that's what we do here. We love our hamburgers and our, you know.
Is it because of all the extra fats and things that come with the animal protein?
No, it appears to be the animal protein itself and the effect that it has on the body, the protein itself.
That it's just harder to digest?
Well, it is harder to digest. Yes, it is harder to digest. But the protein itself seems to have a deleterious effect. And, of course, animal protein has a very acidic effect on the body. So it turns the body cells acidic, which is detrimental. And then there's a lot of, hormones in meat that also have an effect on the body.
And this has to do with the way the cattle and chickens are raised?
Well,
particularly
it does, particularly today, where they're raised with lots of hormones, as well as antibiotics and other drugs. And again, they bioaccumulate. They eat grains that have been heavily sprayed with pesticides, and so you bioaccumulate the pesticides. But just animal protein itself doesn't seem to be good in excessive amounts.
So even if you had a chicken that's fed only vegetables, is not fed anything else, or grass-fed beef, and you just limit yourself to 3 or 4 ounces in a day's time.
Yes.
That would be okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And probably more than okay, probably healthy. I don't agree with the people who are complete vegans and don't have any meat at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my own research, my conclusion is that we probably need some animal protein in our diet.
Yeah, we're designed as omnivores. We're supposed
exactly.
to eat a little of everything, right?
Exactly, a little of everything. And we didn't get that much meat because meat was hard to get. It's
right.
a lot easier to pick an apple off a tree than to chase after a rabbit trying to get some
right.
meat.
Or if they felled a deer, it was enough to feed the whole village.
Sure, exactly. And even in Chinese cooking, you know, meat is a condiment. They put a little bit in with the vegetables, and but with us, you see, it's the main course. You know, get a half a pound slab of roast beef, and a little piece of broccoli and a baked potato.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there, it's mostly vegetables with a little bit of meat stirred in, and that's the way we should be doing it. Meat should be a condiment and not the main course.
Right, and when you say protein from vegetables, it would be things like rice and beans together, or
well, everything actually. You know, there's if you look at a calorie of steak and a calorie of broccoli, there's more protein in one calorie of broccoli than there is in one calorie of steak.
Of course, there's more bulk to a calorie
exactly.
of broccoli.
You've got to
too.
Eat more broccoli to get the same amount of protein.
Right.
But nonetheless, there's
mm-hmm.
protein in everything. There's
okay.
protein in broccoli. There's protein in lettuce. So if you eat a good plant-based diet, you'll get your protein.
Right. And what about complete proteins?
I think that's pretty much a myth. I think that's pretty much been exploded. If you eat a variety of foods, you'll get all the amino acids that you need. So it isn't a matter of, every meal you got to eat, a complete protein. If you eat a variety of foods during the course of the day, you'll get all of the amino acids that you need.
Okay. Now, you mentioned when you travel, you don't eat as well as you do at home. Obviously, preparing food is more difficult, and sometimes even obtaining good fresh food is difficult, depending where you are, like in an airport, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like you've experienced the same
yes.
problem.
Well, when you were talking about your own history, I was thinking that's not too dissimilar from mine. I spent 8 years as an industry analyst and was traveling probably about 60% of the time, and working 80-hour weeks and working much too much and developing a lot of allergies and chemical sensitivities along the way, not to the level of severity that you got to, but not too dissimilar. So, yes, I know the syndrome well. So if you are traveling in an airport or even in a hospital for all that, and you're trying to find some food on the fly, what kinds of things do you reach for that are better than your average offering from the vending machine?
Well, as much as possible, I try to eat salads. And actually, these days in a large airport, you can usually find a restaurant that will serve a salad. And so that's what I try to do as much as possible.
Okay, and do you like carry sunflower seed kernels or something like that to sprinkle on your salad to give it a little bit more
zest? On occasion, but actually I don't. It just turns out I've got so many things to worry about, and that's just one more thing, and I tend not to do it.
So reach for that apple or the salad or something like that?
Exactly. As much as possible, eat something that resembles real food.
Right. And even things like tuna salad have mayonnaise in it. And
sure.
Mayonnaise has the wrong fats.
And a lot of times I'll take some nuts with me, you know, and you can munch on the nuts.
Nuts and seeds, preferably raw and unsalted?
Yes, preferably raw and unsalted as much as possible.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to speak some more with Raymond Francis about his book, Never Be Sick Again. I'd like to remind you to go to powerfulpatient.org on the internet. You will find there the handout that goes with this show and lots of other interesting programs that you'll want to browse to see what else is relevant to your interest. The search utility there, I'm sure you will find very helpful. It searches not only Powerful Patient, it also searches the VHL.org website, which again is a treasury of health information. So we welcome you, and we hope that you will also see fit to support this show. Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund and bring us back another day. Thank you.
So once you started modifying your diet, about how long did it take for you to begin feeling better?
It took me, well, I had to learn the hard way. It took me 2 years to restore my health to where
And you were in a very serious position with a liver that was pretty damaged.
Yeah,
right?
My liver was gone.
What did you do to rebuild your liver?
A lot of vitamin C. Mostly a lot of vitamin C, and in fact, that's what saved my life. I was dying of liver failure, and I used my own knowledge of biochemistry. I remembered from my biochemistry that vitamin C was a liver detoxifier, and I was dying of liver toxicity, and I thought, well, what would happen if I took some vitamin C? And I did. And
so you took vitamin C tablets by mouth? Or
some powder in water.
Okay.
And I only took about 3 or 4 grams of it. I wasn't taking a huge amount. And within, 36 hours, I went from not being able to move in bed to being able to sit up in bed. And
wow.
That was quite
dramatic. So you were still in the hospital at this point?
Yes, I was, yeah.
So you were adding the vitamin C to the regimen that you were getting in the hospital?
Yes.
Right, because obviously you can't just check yourself out when you're in a situation like that.
I was dying, and my death was a medical certainty. I mean, they literally said there was nothing that could save me.
Right, and I think, you know, obviously the people who listen to this show are in a number of different categories. Some of them are in the kind of situation that you were facing, where you've got lots of allergies, sort of mysterious, creepy symptoms that no doctor seems to be able to give the right diagnosis to, and that certainly seems to be a very good place to try this kind of all-out nutritional modification plan, because it probably will make a very big impact. But other people are in a very serious medical condition, like the liver failure that you were facing, where, yes, you want to make these changes, and you can't ignore the fact that you have a tumor or whatever it is that is threatening to kill you, and you really need to pay attention both to the Western medicine doctor and change your eating habits. Is that not so?
Well, I don't pay that much attention to the Western medical doctor anymore. I lecture to doctors, and in fact, there are doctors all over the world who are reading Never Be Sick Again and communicating with us and saying, I'm changing the way I practice medicine after reading your book. The way they practice medicine today really doesn't work. Historians a couple of hundred years from now are going to look back on us and think we were all crazy. I mean, we have the technology to do space travel, and we have a system of medicine that is basically stupid. Where did we ever get the idea that you could take a sick person and feed them poison and that that would help them? I mean, that's irrational. Where did we ever get the idea that you could take a sick person and chop them up into smaller pieces and that would make them well? That's irrational. We've essentially got an irrational system of medicine. So the average medical doctor is not very helpful today, unfortunately. If you're in an accident, if you have trauma, that type of thing, state of the art. Absolutely state of the art. I mean, if you're in an auto accident and you go to a good American hospital, you'll get the best care in the world. But when it comes to disease, the whole thing falls apart.
To chronic diseases in particular.
Yeah, just the whole thing falls apart.
Right. So we have an excellent system of emergency medicine, you know, the kind of traumatic incident that you were just describing. But we do tend to be pretty helpless in the face of these chronic issues. And I think one of the problems is that most doctors are trained to believe that the patient is not going to change the way he eats and the way he lives. And given that, then what do you do? And they'll give you these medications. But one of the best things that we can do for ourselves is to take our food plan by the neck and really take a very
Hippocrates
hard look at
it. Said, "Let food be thy medicine," and Hippocrates knew what he was talking about. And the average doctor really doesn't know enough. I serve on a committee. There's a whole movement over here to improve the nutrition in the communities, and I serve on this committee. There's five medical doctors on this committee. Of the five, four of them are overweight. And there isn't a one of them that really understands nutrition. Not a one of them. And they're serving on a nutrition committee.
Because it's never been included in medical schools until very, very recently, and only now in a minority of medical schools, I think, right?
Only in a minority, and still not very much. Nutrition should be the whole basis of medical school. what's more important than giving cells what they need? If you don't, if you don't give your cells what they need every day, they will not function right.
I remember I was once chaperoning a trip to Paris for some American teenagers, and in order to fill up the plane, we took some adults with us, and the adults were more trouble than the teenagers, to tell you the truth. But one of the adults got sick, you know, and we call the doctor, and I'm translating with the doctor, and at the end of the doctor's visit, he hands me a prescription a piece of paper from his prescription pad, and on it he had written the foods that this woman was supposed to eat. It was nothing about medication. It was all about, you know, plain ground beef, applesauce, mashed potatoes, that kind of thing. And I thought, how interesting that he's written her food requirements on a prescription slip.
Different approach, isn't it?
Different approach. Yeah, this was in the 1960s in France. But yes, I mean, as you say, medicine should begin with, what are you eating?
There's only two reasons why cells malfunction. They're either not getting everything they need, or they're getting something that is interfering with their normal function.
Or, and there are a number of people in our listenership here who have genetic flaws in their genome. So every once in a while, there is some genetic risk factor at work for you,
but at
the same time,
but that's not a problem.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Genetic, absolutely not a problem. See, we have a total misconception here about genes. Genes run our lives, no question about it. But who runs the genes? We do. So we run our lives. So if you have a genetic predisposition to something, you will never get that disease. Say you have a genetic predisposition to cancer. You will never get cancer unless you turn that gene on. So you control your life. And the genes are 70% of your genes do absolutely nothing. They just sit there until you ask them to do something. So if you go to an oncogene, that's a cancer gene, and you say, please give me cancer, the oncogene will bow low and say, yes, master, you can have all the cancer you want. And after you have all the cancer you want, if you're unhappy about it, well, then stop asking the gene and the cancer will simply go away. We are in control, not the genes.
You know, the one real problem I have with what you just said is that sometimes that's taken to mean that if you can't get a cancer, it's your fault.
It is. Health is a choice. It is. Now, we haven't been taught this, and we haven't been taught how to control our genes, certainly granted that. And so there's a huge gap in our education. But the fact is that we control the genes.
Let me read a paragraph from his book that maybe helps to position this a little bit better. Quote, I'm on page 81. Many people assume that bad genes or a family history of disease predestines them to be sick. In truth, while genetic predispositions do put a person at risk for disease, what a person chooses to do to protect the health of their cells and their genes plays a more important role in whether or not disease will develop. Choices, rather than genetic inheritance, are the key. We must focus on how we play the game, not the cards we were dealt. What we eat, what we do, and what we are exposed to determines how healthy we will be. End quote.
And we have to learn to take this responsibility, and that's why I wrote Never Be Sick Again.
Well, I certainly agree that we have a very strong role in that, and that we can play a very strong role. But we still live on planet Earth in the year 2008,
mm-hmm.
and the environment is the way the environment is. We only have a certain amount of impact on it. We all have DDT in our fat, you know. So there are certain environmental things over which we have little or no control.
Well, yes, that's true. There are certain environmental things that we as individuals do not have control over.
Right.
As a society we do, but as individuals we don't. However, 80% of the toxic load that we're exposed to on a daily basis is under our personal control. So anybody can remove 80% of their toxic load simply by making different choices, learning where the toxins are, making different choices. Take something as simple as toothpaste. Toothpaste is a deadly poison. You know, read the label on the box. It says if you swallow any of this, you know, call a poison control center, you know, get an ambulance, rush to the hospital. So, very simple. Choose a brand of toothpaste that is not toxic rather than one that is, and you've just cut a whole bunch of toxins out of your life.
So, tell me what you think about tooth fillings.
Tooth fillings are toxic, particularly mercury fillings are extremely toxic. Do not get mercury fillings. If you have mercury fillings, find a competent dentist who is fully qualified to remove them in the way that they need to be removed and get rid of them.
How do you know if you have them?
Mercury fillings look like they're dark-colored. They're silver-colored. Look in your mouth and see if you have any silver-colored fillings, and you have mercury.
I wager 90% of Americans do.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons we're so sick, because the mercury comes out of those fillings.
So you're saying the silver-colored stuff that they use to fill our teeth has mercury in it.
Yes, about 50%.
Which I knew when I was in grammar school was a poison.
Yes. Well, about
50%. Why would they put that in our mouth?
I don't know. Ask them. They know at this point that what it's doing, but nobody's willing to admit it because of the potential legal ramifications.
Is there an alternative?
Yes, the best alternatives today, of course, are the plastic composites. Even they are not completely safe, but they're much safer than the mercury.
So you can ask your doctor if he uses plastic composite fillings.
Right, and that's what you should absolutely have. You should not have any mercury fillings whatsoever.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a very engaging conversation, Raymond. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, yes, if you'd like to get a copy of my book, Never Be Sick Again, it's available at Barnes & Noble and Borders and Amazon. And if you want to call Beyond Health and get a copy of the book, call Beyond Health, and if you do, I will give you a free one-year subscription to my newsletter, Beyond Health News. It's one of the top newsletters in the country. Be absolutely free to you along with the book if you say, I heard it on Joyce's show. So if I heard it on Joyce's show, you get it free. And the number to call to get the free newsletter along with the book is 800-250-3063. 800-250-3063.
Great, and you heard about it on Powerful Patient. So thank you very much, Raymond, and best of luck with your mission.
Thank you kindly.
It's a very thought-provoking discussion. And next week we're going to talk with Gail, a woman who has a genetic condition, a very significant genetic condition called VHL. And she has been working with nutrition and herbs for the last 15 years and is going to share with you how she has, in fact, won good control over her disease. So it's not gone away, but it is under much better control than it was 15 years ago. So be with us next week, and I hope that you will be well and be a powerful patient. Thank you.